You are listening to the Green Lantern Corecast, episode number 136. This episode, Quarter Ring at a Time. This episode is brought to you by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/lanterns. Over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player.
To the Green Lantern Corecast. I'm your host, Frankie Mattel, and joining me today are Brandon West, Naim Siddiqui, Colton Clayton, and Eric Cahill. Everybody say hi.
Hi.
Hello.
What's up? And we are here to bring you all the news you need to know about Green Lantern and other Green Lantern properties, such as movies, comic books, cartoon iterations, maybe. But first, Brandon, what do we have for the news today?
Well, straight off New York Comic Con came this bit of news. Green Lantern is crossing over in conjunction with Boom Studios for a Planet of the Apes miniseries. That's six issues of Green Lantern and Planet of the Apes coming February 2017. No creative team has been announced yet, so there's that. But yeah, six issues.
Is it Hal Jordan?
Probably Hal Jordan. Yeah.
I feel like didn't I pitch that like 3 weeks ago?
Two things. One, why? And two, why?
Because the answer to both of your questions is not. Like, why not? And why not? Like, that's a great idea. Why not? Shit. They should do as many franchises as they can.
Pokemon. It evolves into Wobbuffet. I get that. But come on.
What?
They should specifically not make it like the Star Trek one where they overdid all the multicolored things. They should, you know. I want to see Monkey with a Ring. I don't think we need to see anything besides that.
See, what I want to see is a crossover with Planet of the Apes and Harry Potter called Planet of the Snapes.
All I want to see with this crossover, when it happens, is I want it to be the old school Golden Age Alan Scott. That's where he went this whole time, to Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, they should do something really unique with it.
That would actually be kind of interesting. That would be very interesting. And Hal Jordan wakes up and Hal Jordan is like playing the Charlton Heston role. That would be kind of awesome. Alan Scott.
Planet of the Apes is in. It's not. Planet of the Apes is in the far future, or not. It's sometime in the future. So, it would be funny to be like, look, it's a guy from the 30s in the 2080s. So,
yeah,
I'm not really sure how they would pull it off.
I don't know. Alan Scott was, you know, frozen in time for a long time and wakes up and he's at the Planet of the Apes. I would love to see
Alan Scott like at the foot of the the head of the. Statue of Liberty, go like, you blew it up.
Yeah,
you blew it all up.
That would be amazing. Like that, they're not going to do that, but that would be awesome.
You know, they should do a balls of the wall. Just do it in the continuity of the new Planet of the Apes movies, where it's like real interesting and real thoughtful and real mean spirited, and like, you know, everybody, all the humans are all killed by the end, and it's just like Andy Serkis in a motion capture drawing, contemplating a green ring for six issues. And like by the end of it, you're like, man, like Tomi Cabell is so great. Why doesn't he get more work? That's how the series should end. But yeah.
All right, Brandon,
it's going to be that universe, right?
Brandon, what else we got?
Justice League of America is coming out in 2017, and we were finally given partial rosters. And guess what? None of them are Green Lantern so far. So we know that the series is written by Steve Orlando. And it'll be spinning out of the Justice League versus Suicide Squad event coming next year, I think. And so far, the roster is Vixen, Killer Frost, the Ray, and the Atom. I only bring this up because we got two Green Lanterns on the Justice League team. We got two Green Lantern books, would you guys be disappointed if Justice League of America did not feature a Green Lantern?
Well, there's no Green Lanterns to go around, that's for sure, but...
Are they getting rid of the core title that already exists to replace it, or is it just a new title?
Nope, just a new title.
It would seem silly if they had another... I always like when they do, like, the Avengers West Coast, and it's got, like, kind of derivative versions of the Avengers, you know, that you can do funny stuff with, but something could have, like... I'm not going to say the word Larflees, but something like, you know, Larflees are one of the more animated multicolor Ringas, but nah, I think it's cool they don't have a Green Lantern. Some cosmic presence would be nice, but I mean, but I'm okay with it.
Yeah, you have a little Adam Strange in there or something.
There's just so many characters they could do a lot with. You could just plunk one of the many thousands of Green Lantern characters that isn't getting a lot of love, or maybe even like Kyle or something in there. But I mean, it's called Justice League of America, so if they're making a point to call it America, they really should keep it terrestrial or territorial to the continental United States. So I should
Justice League of America, they bring back Chip for Green Lantern representation.
Yeah. I would love to see Chip back.
His tongue back, so.
Chip is smaller than Arkrilla's tongue, so it should be fine.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, Chip is about as useful as a tongue on Arkrilla.
Brandon, anything else?
Yes, sir. Our last bit of news comes straight from DC Entertainment. A new mobile game called DC Comics Legends. It's a free-to-play strategy RPG game scheduled to debut in November on iOS and Android devices, where you get to play characters from Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, of course, or Joker, Lex Luthor, Solomon Grundy, Sinestro, Carol Ferris. You can check the GreenLanterncorps.com for a trailer to this game, and not to mention a whole bunch of screenshots of Carol Ferris. One thing I want to mention about this game,
I was really surprised you didn't lead with Carol Ferris to begin with, but I'm glad you made it up for it at the end there.
Yeah, one thing I like to mention about this game. Carol Ferris. Yeah.
Why not?
It's not objectifying everybody. Like, Brandon insists he is the number one Carol Ferris. I don't even think he likes Carol Ferris that much, but I think he fetishizes the idea of being her fan. Now, not fetishizes the explicit costume the character wears. I just think he has this thing in his head where he's like, I need to be the guy that likes Carol
Ferris. He's in love with Carol Ferris. He's in love with the idea of Carol Ferris.
There's only one screenshot of Carol Ferris in this patch.
Oh, shit. We just discovered Brandon has partial blindness. Like, oh, no. Sorry, man.
Anyway. He has double vision.
So the villain of the game is Necron. That's cool.
That's too bad.
You get to play. As you play, you upgrade your character's power set, and that comes with costume upgrades. So if you check out the GreenLanterncorps.com, you'll see an alternate take on classic costumes. You'll see White Lantern Sinestro or super cyborg military-looking John Stewart.
Is that John Stewart? Like, did whoever designed this game never read a Green Lantern comic and doesn't know what John Stewart looks like?
He's a black guy with little hair. That's all you need to know.
Ooh, Cyborg?
He looks like Jax from Mortal Kombat.
Oh, Steel? That's
awesome.
Is it John Henry Irons?
Yeah, it's John Henry Irons as John Stewart.
Major Jackson Briggs, yo.
Interesting enough that Hal Jordan is listed as Green Lantern. Sinestro is listed as Sinestro. Carol is listed as Star Sapphire. And John Stewart is just listed as Green Lantern.
So
the one and only.
And they have the same little icon. Oh, no, so does Green Lantern and Flash, so never mind. But, like, is John Stewart just an alternate costume for Hal Jordan?
If you think about it, that's kind of like saying, like, oh, this is Officer Davis, and this is also his friend, Police Officer.
Well, no, because they're both listed as Green Lantern, right? So this is Officer, and this is also Officer.
But this sounds like a really cool idea when Marvel did it 3 or 4 years ago. I'm just kidding.
I don't even
the know. Mobile game Contest of Champions?
That sounds like a really big shot.
You know, I'm not really a fan of mobile games personally. I'm old fashioned. I like a console or a PC, something you can use with controls and buttons.
I would definitely play a Flash free run game.
Probably like $1 million off. You can get it for you. I think this is a cool idea because I think it shows that DC is branching out in a way that they really should, because their universe should be more represented in multi-platforms and stuff. I think we kind of like take it for granted that they're so specialty shop oriented. It's so weird to me that you don't see Green Lantern shit all over the place. Like, not Green Lantern necessarily, but the characters. DC has like a huge bench of characters that are super ancient. The fact that it took them this long to get a movie series off the ground and they're stumbling all over the place, it's mind-boggling to me. So I think this is the kind of thing they should always be doing. We should have an option.
I've had Marvel puzzle, like Marvel Puzzle Quest and Spider-Man Run or whatever it's called installed on my phone for like ever, right? And I play those games all the time. I'm like, yeah, like that's how I recommend, like, keep up to date or like keep around with Marvel characters. Like, oh yes, I'm gonna play this Bejeweled clone, but I get to have Hawkeye.
Exactly. It's not hard.
If they had Subway Surfer, but as the Flash, that thing would be like number one in the iTunes store.
I don't know what Subway Surfer is, but yeah, probably.
Especially with this Arrow of universe, and all that stuff, like they have an excuse to kind of franchise the shit out of themselves.
I saw the Arrow score on vinyl today, and I'm like, is it really that good? That good of vinyl? Like, I don't know if it's worth paying $28 or $35 or whatever for.
Yeah, well, I saw a GIF on Tumblr today. It was making fun of Ben Affleck, but the gist of it was that his son cared more about the Flash than he did Batman. And I was just like, well, that's probably not from the comic books. That's definitely from the TV show. And like that says something. Like there is a big audience out there that are seeing these characters. And that's the same audience that's going to play this game.
You know, I think that gets to a bigger question that maybe we don't have time to discuss here, but the idea of, I remember when the Arrow show started, I liked it, and then there was a certain amount of, once it became such a big universe, it kind of in my heart, before it started really getting bad last year, it sort of in my heart kind of took over as the, not canon necessarily, but I was more interested in what they were doing on TV than what they were doing in the comics. And there's a certain amount of cheating, like, TV, it's easier to watch than to read. But there is a certain amount of like workman, like just process of the DC comics, especially that they just kind of pump out a series with the title on it and don't really care if the art is kind of like lackluster and they're not really that interested in writing a really great story every month. They're just kind of pumping out a product, you know? Whereas on TV, there's almost like an impetus to actually be entertaining, actually be good, because it's so easy to do something like The Flash and it turn into a joke, like you saw happen with Legends and Arrow. Like, you know, like they try to do something with it, it fucked up so badly, you know? So I think it kind of gets more into the idea of like, aren't these characters more important as IPs, you know, than they really are as stories, even to us as somebody who, as a group of people that talk about comics almost exclusively and stuff. So it's kind of weird that it's not like, it's kind of weird that they're even considered like, oh man, the comics, the Green Lantern comics are so great. It's like, dude, have you read Green Lantern comics? You know, and I love them, but there's this almost like, why isn't this more of a franchise? You know, it's very strange.
I agree. That's something we should talk about at a different date. But yeah, it's not something we can talk about right now. So, you know, we still have to talk about so much other stuff, especially, right, you know, Green Lantern related.
Sure.
But, yeah, we're going to, so that's pretty much all the news that we had from Brandon, right?
Correct.
All right, so we're going to move on to talk about like the issues that just came out, such as Green Lantern number 8, Justice League, and How to Join the Green Lantern Corps. Moving to Green Lantern number 8, you know, it's the, I want to call it the Stranger Things Green Lantern book, like this issue itself. It's just the weird Halloween-esque, like, you know, storyline that they pretty much jumps off after number 7, where the Guardian Raimi pretty much bolts out of the house saying something about Guardians, and their, you know, and his nephews all like, oh man, Dominators. And they all rush out to try to go find them. And of course they have to stop because of, I don't know, Halloween escapades. They're all sitting down trying to talk to other people, trying to figure out if anyone has seen this Guardian. And it is the strangest, weird book that pretty much starts off with a really cool sequence where we see the two Dominators that are chasing after him. And then it pretty much stops a halt because they have to make it fun in games or something. And then, I don't know, it's a weird issue. I do love most of the, like, you know, what's going on, like, with this weird back and forth and trying to, Give Simon this whole like, I want to pretty much be the guy, and I want to show that I have to, that, you know, be this hardcore dude to be a Green Lantern. And the Guardian go like, no, you are nowhere near the guy I want, and Jessica being the one who's like, no, you have to understand, we're all you have. It's a weird book. And I don't know, I do give it a read, but I do want to know what you guys think about it. So, like, Nye, what do you think about this issue?
That's a buy, right? Because it's buy, borrow, pass.
Yeah, give it a buy. It's a buy. I say give it a read, so it's pretty much a buy. It's a buy.
You can read something you borrow. Anyway. yeah, so I would definitely say, personally, so you said it's like, you know, a Stranger Things issue. The difference is that Stranger Things is, how would I say this, visually pleasing, and this is Ed Bennis. so that's a big difference there. The issue, I think, was just weird, and I think a dialogue was still too. This is still the same writer, right? This is Sam Humphries.
Yes, this is still Sam Humphries.
Yeah, I don't know. The writing seemed more stilted and awkward than it usually does, and maybe it's just a little bit that the characters were being a little stilted and awkward, and it's supposed to sound stilted and awkward, but for the most part, it just felt like Humphries was I don't know, like he sort of just spit this one out, trying to get to the next more important to him issue. I'm interested in where the story is kind of going. I think we sort of got to some of the stuff a little weirdly slow, but I'm interested to see what the next thing is, who this guy is who's driving to get this Green Lantern ring. I'd be interested to see if like somebody pulled from way back in continuity, but I doubt it. Like, it'd be
it's
cool.
Sonar being brought back.
Yeah, right. Yeah. It'd be cool if it was
it's Evil Star, obviously.
It's Evil Star, you know, the guy I've been waiting for since
asking for years.
If it was, like, Guy Gardner's like beat partner in the Baltimore PD or whatever, like that would be really interesting. I don't know, like whatever.
It's not necessarily a bad idea. It's the wrong book for it, but yeah.
It's Raphael Scarf. That's a all right. I doubt that's what it's gonna be. But I'm interested to see what happens there. Otherwise, though, I don't think the art was very good. There was a lot of missed opportunities. These kids were clearly supposed to be the Stranger Things kids, but like not acting out exactly. Like someone Ed Bennis didn't watch the show and didn't know the one kid has a hat or something.
He saw the first episode. That's about it.
I don't know. It seems like the art really like kills the issue for me rather. And so I would definitely I'd give it a pass, really. I think you honestly don't even need this issue. Like he just runs away and then they get him and there's a little thing with the Dominators who I guess aren't the main villain of this arc actually. They just sort of were mentioned and I guess they're creepy, so it's a Halloween creepy thing. But for the most part, I think this issue doesn't matter. And I'm interested to see where the next issue is. And I think the last issue ended okay, but this issue doesn't really do much. Also, it's weird that I don't know who drew the cover, but on the cover, it seems like Fareed's supposed to be the one who's dressed as Superman when he's dressed as Flash in the issue.
That's true.
Like, that seems weird that the Superman kid is front and center and colored vaguely brown. When he's supposed to be Flash in the comic.
All right. Well, Brandon, what do you think about the issue?
I thought it was good. No, that's not true. Emanuela Lapacino drew the cover, by the way.
That's the variant cover. The main cover was Robson Rocha, Joe Prado, Alex Sinclair.
Well, there you go.
The very cover is cool. It's the two Green Lantern rings going into to the jack-o'-lantern. Which is cool.
Yeah, the jack-o'-lantern. Yeah.
Yeah. I pretty much agree with you, Naim, that not a very good issue.
Jack-o'-lantern.
You bastard.
Like lantern.
Oh, Jesus.
Like lantern,
more like a Jessica lantern.
You magnificent.
No. That was terrible.
I regret it as soon as I said it.
Thank you, Brandon. Continue what you're saying.
Yeah. Essentially what Naim just said. It was an unnecessary issue. Didn't provide any thrills. I thought the backstory of Rami being exiled was essentially pointless because he had already told us that.
Yeah, it seemed pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's like we didn't need to see it. He told us that already.
And it's very generic, like, you know, like, oh man, I've done something. It's like, yeah, but you didn't really show us how you did it. It's like, yeah, but I did it, right? And it's like, you're now being exiled for this thing we didn't really see you do, but created.
And the storytelling was amazing. He's like, guys, it's great. I made this thing. They're like, what, Rami? Why did you do that? He's like, that's cool. I made this thing. He's like, Rami, that's like the one law. He's like, Rami, he's like, guys, it's great. And they're like, Rami, you're exiled forever. He's like, oh, what? No.
I wish that's what that was the actual dialogue. That would have been great.
I did like, he was like, what? No. And then, like, you know, after millions of years, I realized, yeah, they were right.
Yeah, he's like a Joe Trulio character in everything Joe Trulio.
Oh my god.
That's it. It was just Joe Trulio, the Guardian.
Now I can't unread him as Joe Trulio. That would be
okay. Amazing. Brandon, what else you got?
There's a scene or a panel where just as Simon and Jessica show up at the clock tower, Rami's like, I'm so sorry. And it's just like, why are you sorry? Like, you chose to run away. You chose to create the ring. What part are you sorry about? Like, then you berate them for showing up. You berate them for trying to protect you. It just didn't seem like, why are you sorry? And I don't know. And then the Dominators were defeated so easily. It's just like, why did we spend so much time on them in the Rebirth issue if you're just going to dispatch them away in 5 seconds from rookie Green Lanterns? It was ridiculous. And yeah, Ed Benn, as much as I praised him for showing up early on in the series, this was a return to form for Ed.
Return to form. Wow. Yep, absolutely.
Yikes. So, yeah, definitely a pass for me.
Okay. Eric, what do you think of the issue?
It's definitely a red light here. It's really a complete pass. There's literally no point to the issue. And I think there's so much difficult stuff to unpack. Like, why is Rami all of a sudden, apprehensive about the ring? I feel like the first couple times he was so completely super enthusiastic. He was like willing to hang out in the house like a crazy person. But now, I mean, I guess it's supposed to be one of those like crazy old Yoda things where the guy has these huge mood swings. But I didn't even understand what he was like running away for. And then when it takes to the end for Jessica to explain to him how to emotionally resolve his problem, like, here's how to resolve your emotional problem. For me to even realize he A, had an emotional problem, and B, that was the emotional problem that needed to be resolved. You know, it was very completely, the characterization was like all over the place. And like I said, there's some couple of funny bits of dialogue and stuff, but like the idea that Jessica Cruz was in her apartment for 3 years or however long it was, and now she's in the most crowded, most exuberant, most anti-agoraphobic.
Yeah.
And she's, oh my God. She's like, yeah, man, ha, she had more fun than Simon. And it's kind of like, dude, like, why is Simon the one that seems like he has agoraphobia? You know, like, and the premise should be like, oh, Simon is upset because of Islamophobia, makes him really apprehensive. You know, Jessica actually has agoraphobia. So it's the whole thing is very strange. Anyway, also, like I said, the same thing with last issue where they kind of stop the story to do these kind of character things. And you're like, oh, that's what we normally want, but there's nothing, there's no depth there. It's super lame. And you guys kind of said, like, oh man, the Guardians get taken out, the Dominators get taken out so easily. I was like, why did they get taken out even easier? They're just dudes with guns. Like, why does it inside? Oh man, Simon's pinned down. He can't do anything about it. It's like, why can't he just, like, boom them in the face with like the constructs he can make, you know? So it was just very much like a huge, huge miss all over the place. Just, you know, I don't need to recap Rami's ridiculous origin. Like, there's no origin there. He's like, I'm gonna make a phantom ring. Like, did he not realize that he wasn't allowed to do that? Why was he so impressed with himself? Did he forget that that's like their only law? Like, he's like, it's like, hey man, I broke the most sacred law we have. It's like, look, I strangled this puppy to death. His guts are totally a cool color. It's like, no, it's a puppy. It's like, I know, it's great. It's like, no, it's Rami. It's not great. It's not great, Rami. You know, it's very strange.
The funniest thing is that, you know, during his origin sequence, there's never really a explanation as to why he made it. There's no depth.
Yeah, that would have been some nice characterization.
Literally no reason.
He alludes to it. He does say there's something fatally wrong with the green rings.
Oh yeah, which I guess is their whole, you know, their Yellow Lantern bullshit. But
it struck me as weird that I thought it strikes me as weird because I always assumed that the implication with the rings was, and they've retconned it so many times, with the idea that they're a certain color based on a certain willpower, and they were designed to have a limitation. Like, they could have made a ring that does anything, but they deliberately make a ring that only responds to this and that only responds to that.
And, the reason, you know, again, there's been retcons many times, but the original reason for Green Lantern to even have a yellow impurity was because they didn't want the whole Manhunter thing anymore. They made sleeveless robots who could just massacre an entire, you know, space sector because they're emotionless and they could just shoot things with all the energy that they had. And we're like, no, you know what? We're going to give it to a human element, but we're going to have limitations to these humans or these, you know, these sentient life forms, because, you know, you don't want them to have the most powerful weapon in the universe. You just want it to have close to it.
So what you're saying is that this new Guardian kind of missed the orientation program portion where they explained this.
Probably.
It's one of those things, you start a job and they like... you start a job and they like your work and they sign you off the paperwork. You got to do, you got to watch this sex harassment thing, but we'll get to that eventually. And like 3 years later, hilariously, they go over your files. Like, you never watched the sex harassment videos? Like, yeah, I totally sex harassed a lady. Sorry, guys. Like, yeah, but you're still exiled forever.
It would have been so much easier to have Rami be a character that was like, you know, during the beginning and the onset of the Guardians, I made something that, you know, that we didn't know about. We didn't know we could make rings. We didn't know we could do all this stuff. And I made something that I shouldn't have made. And then later on, the police force gets made. The Manhunter units gets made because of this mistake. And then it's like, no, we don't need this. We're going to create rings, but we're going to limit them because we're only going to use for the wellspring.
Yeah, made a lot more sense than...
Right, and essentially, my thing is, I think the Phantom Ring itself and Rami himself are both like weird derivations of concepts anyway. The Phantom Ring, the concept of the Phantom Ring, like anybody can wear it, anybody can do anything with it. But like this reiteration of the universe has reiterated with Omega Men and stuff that Kyle did not have willpower, like Gantt really did choose him randomly. The Green Lantern Ring can really work on anybody. It just goes to someone with, like, you know, who can overcome fear and stuff. But Kyle did not have that. So Kyle has a ring that does that.
Jessica, right? Jessica's whole point is, like, she has trouble overcoming fear, right?
Yeah,
like,
the ring itself, well, you have power, you have the ability to overcome fear, so that's why it flew to her.
Yeah.
That's kind of a retconny thing, but it's one of those things where they're like, isn't this a cool concept that we're going to create a brand new concept that's basically just like the original Green Lantern concept that we retconned a couple of years ago? Yeah. And even the idea of Raimi himself, he's a Lantern that was exiled, and we're like, okay, he's a Lantern that was exiled. There's a lot of those dudes. I mean, we've all read Krona 60,000 times, you know. And like, what's going to happen? And you're like, oh, what's the story here? And it's like, not only is it like a very minimal version of what happened to Krona, like it's completely undramatic. Like it was very much, like I said, very much like a run of the mill, almost like a cutaway gag in a sitcom, what happens to Rami's entire life, you know? And like it's like the joke of, they found this guy in the basement with 30 years worth of beer. We forgot to fire him. Like that's the kind of joke of Rami's life. So why did you make it seem so dramatic?
That's legitimately a joke from the IT crowd.
Well, there you go. And then, like, you know, and then why did he have, like, half cybernetic parts? Like, why did they make it that he built the Phantom Ring and thing? Why did they let him take the Phantom Ring with him? Like, there's so much more to this story that could have been fleshed out. There could have been some tragic stuff. There could have been some real sadness about it.
Yeah,
it just seems like, I'm super bummed that they kicked me out 30,000 years ago. And when Jessica brings it up, you're like, wow, that you said it out loud. It makes me seem like a fucking idiot. Like, it does, dude. Like, really, really, not an entertaining, I'm going to wrap it up right, not an entertaining story. Totally bad filler. The character just did something contrary just to give the character something to do for an issue, which we don't really need to perpetuate this kind of nonsense fake stuff. You know, it's like you see on a 23-episode TV show, like all of a sudden the character will keep a secret for no reason for 5 episodes because they need something to do for the midseason. You know? So Rami did not need to run away. Like, he did not need to. Oh, it's like, oh, I realized something that I feel bad, so I'll fly away and hide. And it's just the whole thing was real. And especially, how come Simon and Jessica are just walking around on the street looking for him? Like, that's the least effective way to do anything. And it's just, I like how Simon says, like, someone's going to realize I'm not a Green Lantern. They're going to take the job away from me. It's like, do you not realize, like, every other Green Lantern is, like, presumed dead except for Hal? And, like, no one can take the ring from you. Like, it's very strange. Like,
it is weird that they have no idea what the dealings are with the other Green Lanterns. But the funniest thing about that entire sequence is they're just walking around the streets trying to find Raimi in the middle of a Halloween costume, like, parade. Is that his own sister is the one that goes, like, hey, where would you go if you're going to hide? He's like, oh, yeah, it's Watchtower. It's like, what? Why did he just do that to begin with? Why did you have to do this weird sequence when you have to go through, we have to take my nephew into the middle of the street to, like, you know, if we can, like have her get candy. And she's like, all right, you just go to the fucking watchtower and find him there. He's like, I should have done that to begin with, shouldn't I? He's like, yeah.
Am I the only one who thought when they was like, oh, I'd take to the skies that, you know, the Guardian went back into space like a smart person.
A smart person.
It's really strange that, like, he has omnipotent power and he just goes to a clock tower. Like, it's very strange. Very strange.
Hey, Calden. Your thoughts on this?
Real quick, I will say I'm usually the one to harp on the fact that they completely ignore Jessica's agoraphobia, and I didn't even this time because there was so much else to talk about in this issue that, like, I'm like, whatever, man, agoraphobia, like, yeah, it's stupid. Anyway, let's talk about everything else.
Yeah, either, like, never mention it because you never use it, or stop mentioning it, you know, like, it's just...
All right, so Golden, what do you think of the issue?
Well, I certainly just thought of it as just like, oh, a little silly, charming Halloween story that I had some fun with, maybe some backstory, but whoo!
And then we showed up.
I was like, wow, how to follow up that?
Let's not become our old selves. Let's talk about some nice... Let's have Colton say some nice things.
You know, I've always been fond of little holiday special things that sometimes stories do, where it's like, yeah, it doesn't progress the plot that much, and oh, it's not gonna be important in the grand scheme of things. But sometimes you just go through a series, you just need like a little downtime, a little we're having fun, this is something goofy, and then we can get back to serious super fighting action, you know, next time. And in that regard, I think it was charming. I liked a little bit with everyone's favorite Green Lantern, Simon Buzz, and his nephew. That was fun, you know, because you need little character moments like that. You know, you can't just be. Yeah, I didn't think about the agoraphobia thing at the time as well. It's like yeah, I completely forgot about that. But you're right; she probably should have been a little more nervous in the public,
right?
I mean, it'd be one thing if she's like, oh, she's in the costume, so she doesn't feel as bad because she's like playing a character or something like that in her head.
Just didn't mention it. Yeah, exactly.
Say something like,
or it's like, you know,
that was weird too. She makes a point to say, I'm wearing my Jessica Cruz costume. Haha. Like, you are wearing an actual costume. Like, you're not wearing a Jessica Cruz costume. Explicitly, you are disguising your Jessica Cruz self.
Okay.
But, like, those little moments I thought was nice. And I was a little behind on the Green Lantern issue, so the flashback was at least informative of me of telling me what I missed. So I did appreciate that fact. You know, sometimes show, not tell is a pretty good thing. It's like, you can offhand drop 1,000 bits of information, but it's not really the same as seeing something. And I think that a lot of stories and comics really need to do that more, not just, oh, hey, he did this once 5 years ago in this thing in one panel that they mentioned off camera. It's like, you know, just show it, and it has a little more meaning. So definitely like that. It just kind of seemed a little anticlimactic, the whole big attack and fight thing, but I did like that Jessica was able to do something pretty cool. So, you know, I take that in positive stride. Overall, I mean, it's not something I would, you know, say go out and buy, but at least check out. I mean, if you were looking for something a little different, just a little something fun and mostly meaningless, but, you know, it is what it is.
Okay. So you're giving it a borrow?
Yeah.
Okay. Sweet. All right, so we're going to move on to Justice League. Justice League just came out again. Not too much to like pretty much talk about. It just pretty much has this entire sequence where they're being attacked by some weird alien invasion thing. The Green Lanterns do something really cool. They stop, you know, they overcome it because, you know, they have the ability to overcome fear, and that's their entire point. And that's pretty much it. Like, not much else going on in that Justice League issue, except for, you know, a lot of talking. Jessica Cruz goes out with Barry Allen. There's something for anyone who's like not reading Justice League and is not understanding that Jessica Cruz apparently has a crush on Barry Allen. So Barry Allen is, you know, they have a date. It's a cool issue. I will check it out. I would say give it a borrow. That's pretty much all I'm going to say for that Justice League issue because nobody else read it here.
I read it.
Brandon, what do you think of the Justice League issue then?
I thought it was pretty good, man. I thought the date with Jessica and Barry was done fantastically. It was getting to a point where I was like, are we really reading them order dinner? And it's like, yeah, I'm really reading them order dinner. And it was like Colton just said, he likes those issues where, you know, heroes take breaks. And this was that. And then it turned negative for like the second half of the issue, and it was like all these situations you see Batman in the Batcave, like essentially brushing off Alfred, like he's
brooding.
Like truly brooding. Superman being angry and talking about he's gonna kill Batman at the dinner table with his son and Lois. Then you got Barry Allen being the creepiest person I've ever seen.
He probably just watched Dawn of Justice.
Stay tuned, guys. This is what we're gonna get for the Justice League movie,
and it's all done in a unique art style that works in action scenes, but doesn't work so much. And
for the lulls and just life scenes. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah.
By the way, again, still written by Brian Hitch and drawn by Matthew Clark and Tom Derenick.
Yeah, yeah. Matthew Clark is like Yannick Paquette light. Very, very similar styles, just not as detailed as Yannick gets.
And Yannick Paquette is one of the who did the Baron cover.
I love Yannick's work. He did Wonder Woman Earth 1, and he's done a bunch of work with Grant Morrison, including the Batman Inc. stuff. He's fantastic. But Matthew Clark, he is not. Yeah, I thought it was a really interesting issue, and I can't wait for the next one just to see.
Whether or not Superman kills Batman?
Just to see how much Brian Hitch has a grasp on these voices, because I think he's doing a fantastic job of, and that's another thing. We talk about Jessica Cruz not showing her would you call it a disease or a condition? Showing her agoraphobia, she absolutely shows it here.
Oh, yeah, that's something real deep that he does get into in this book. He actually he does a better job portraying it here than what's going on with Sam Humphries and Green Lanterns right now.
Yeah, Sam Humphries has had 8 issues to build up Jessica's agoraphobia and her anxiety with it. Brian Hitch mastered it in 3 pages. It was very impressive. It's like Barry reached to touch her hand and she was like, oh my god, is he touching my hand? Oh my god, he touched my hand. Oh my god, don't touch me, don't touch me. Like, it was great. It was
it's something we're also fantastic. not completely clear whether or not it's because they're all being of course manipulated in some way. Right. Superman is like wanting to rip Batman's head off because that's not what Superman does. It's not a character. He's very much being possessed by something. Batman in the cave seems very much like Batman always is, but he seems to be very weird, especially when I want to talk to Nightwing and he doesn't get any answer from him, and Alfred's all like, are you okay, sir? He's like, yeah, I'm fine. He's like, I don't know, are you? And then yeah, the whole thing with Jessica and Barry. Barry's very being a creep, and Jessica's like freaking out. So it feels very much that it's like they're all being affected in some way. Of course, we haven't seen Cyborg and Simon since the beginning of the book. So I'm really wondering what's going to happen to those two when they're in a football game somewhere. Because now they're trying to be buddies, and I'm like, that's cool. That's cool. Cyborg needs a better friend than just a 10-year-old Billy Batson.
Yeah, that's kind of creepy. Yeah, all in all, I would definitely give this a buy. Bye, bye, bye.
Yeah, definitely. Bye, bye.
I don't want to be the NSYNC. Game, too.
Yeah, definitely NSYNC.
Hey, for you, the listeners of the Green Lantern Corps podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. Check out The 10-Cent Plague, The Great Comic Book Scare and How It Changed America. That's the book that I'm recommending. It's written by David Hodju, narrated by Stefan Rudnicki. Man, I really picked a winner here for me to pronounce names. Every time so far, pretty soon I'm going to run out of books that are about the history of comic books or the history of a certain hero in particular. But for now, I'm not. And in this book, David Hodge reveals how comics years before the rock and roll revolution brought on a clash between post-war children and their pre-war parents. So it's comics as sort of a rock and roll type thing that people used to think comic books were going to destroy America, just like they think video games are going to destroy America now. What? Yeah. So this is 11 hours and 49 minutes, almost 12 hours, and you get it absolutely free with your Audible trial. To download your free audiobook today, go to audibletrial.com/lanterns. Again, that's audibletrial.com/lanterns with an S for your free audiobook today. Check it out.
That was a great natural segue into that plug.
I was going to say the exact same thing.
Word for word, really?
About that Justice League issue.
That was such a natural play. I literally was about to say something and have you talk about it, and then you just went into it.
Jump right in.
That was great. Anyway, you know what else is great? Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps. See how natural that is? No, not at all. But yeah, the Hal Jordan, the Green Lantern Corps, pretty much like getting off from where we left last time, where the whole, you know, which nothing happened. There's a bunch of Hal Jordan like, oh, yeah, I'm going to take down Sinestro and Guy Gardner, like the first two pages with his amazing teeth. And the whole Bernie, you know, Sinestro having sex in the last issue. And then just now he's like post-coitus and now he's wearing awesome space pants. The fact that he has awesome space pants alone sells this issue.
They are truly really awesome space pants.
Those freaking universe pants, man. I don't know why those are just his pre, you know, his post sex pants. They're just crazy. I don't know. Again, this entire issue, just the setup to the beginning of the fight, which is like the post, like the pre-fight where Hal Jordan goes bonkers and starts, you know, making a bunch of F-14s and like attacking, like bomb running the war world, taking out Yellow Lanterns with like 200% power because now they're like being fueled by Guy Gardner's fear, and Guy Gardner is still all the way going, telling everyone to bite him. It's like, it's great. It's like, you know, the artwork's fantastic. There's a bunch of stuff, but it's still like inching towards the bigger fight. Now it's just like, we get slowly, like, we're at two issues of like a bunch of nothing, and now it's like, oh yeah, like inching towards the big fight. Now we finally get to the last point where it's just Hal Jordan taking names, beating a bunch of dudes up, and then Sinestro stopping the issue like flat, going like, okay, now we fight to the death, old foe, yeah. And it ends. I do definitely say it's a read. It's a buy for me. It's just because of the artwork alone. The artwork is freaking great. But yeah, it's just, you know, that 14 is fantastic. It is, again, very, very inching towards the, you know, the big old final battle, apparently. Brandon, what do you think of the issue?
I thought it was pretty good. I should say that at the GreenLanternCorps.com, our reviewer Ben gave this issue 5 out of 5. So if you guys disagree with him, then please feel free to comment at thegreenlanterncorps.com. My opinion, however, I thought the issue was pretty good. It got some Dragon Ball Z like tendencies in there with Hal seemingly powering up while Sinestro was seemingly powering up, and that part of the issue I really enjoyed. The coloring in this was fantastic. I feel like we say that every issue. But I feel like Rafa didn't give, or Venditti didn't give Rafa enough to draw here.
Is that why Rafa just went like, okay, I'm just going to do a lot of freaking stuff going on?
It's just a lot of lines and I don't know, beams. Like, yeah, he drew a couple of planes. The planes are cool, but you know what? I'm not even going to blame Rafa. I'm going to put this on Venditti because I guess my biggest gripe with this issue was that Hal was written like Spider-Man, and like every time he showed up on panel, he had a quip.
Yeah, and clearly Kyle is Spider-Man. Like, we all know this, right? Like, this is
Kyle. No, Kyle's not funny. That's like whatever. I'm not gonna get. People always think, oh, Wally's the funny one. Barry shouldn't be funny. Wally's the funny one. Like, Wally's not a funny one. Like, damn, read the comics. Wally's like a bigger stick in the mud than Barry is. Like, Wally's only funny because of the cartoons. Kyle's not funny. He's just young. He's actually kind of dull. Like, I love him.
I think it's a twist between the Wally West Flash and Spider-Man in the comics is that a lot of these writers just like, oh, we need to have that comedic relief. So when Geoff Johns relaunches the Justice League, Hal Jordan is that comedy relief in the group. And that's what we're getting here is Hal being the funny guy.
It's like, because it's exuberant.
I think
never been the quip guy.
Well, that's the thing is, I think where you're doing your thing. So I can talk about it in mind if you want me to wait, but I think it's deliberate. And like, we've seen this.
I'm sorry. I'm laughing because you literally said, I'll do it in mind if you want me to wait. Did not wait and just kept
going. What I was trying to get to was I was going to say right. Two lines and then say I could elaborate later if you want. But I was going to say I think it's deliberate because we've seen it from the first issue that he's been more funny and more willing to kind of throw these things out. You know, I don't think it's out of nowhere for this issue.
I do. I don't think it was as jarring as it has been in this issue. This issue, it like every time he's on panel, he has something to say, whether it's bring it on or is that all you got or I've done this twice best, for breakfast.
Best one, like, of course, is still where he goes, like, I came to bend the throttle off. I'm like, okay, okay, Hal.
That it's between that and John Stewart's we're gonna storm the beach, Kilowog. It's like he's an alien, he doesn't know what you're talking about.
It's translated course, by the ring. There's
Guy Gardner's, of course,
but it's a euphemism.
We should assume that the ring translates euphemisms.
You have to assume because they use so many euphemisms. If they didn't, then anytime any of the other aliens would have a conversation with Guy Gardner, it would be gibberish. Like, gibberish.
Which half the time it is. That's like the funny time. Whenever you hear like an alien talk to a human, their speech patterns are different for some reason.
That would be a running joke if there was like three or four regular alien characters and Guy was constantly like leading in the battle and they would constantly look at each other and be like, what did he say? What is the plan? Like, they're like, guys, we gotta shove it out their pipe holes and make him cake face and then fly away and they're like, like, that's what they is like, I don't know what that means. Like, what does that mean? Like a running joke of Kyle, like the unfortunate, untranslatable euphemisms of Guy Gardner. But like, you read what they hear, so, like, you know, like, you guys remember when.
So excited about it. I don't know what else to say. I enjoyed it for what it was. I look forward to the one-on-one fight. I think things get a little bit more predictable here. You know, John Stewart and the rest of the core are going to show up and save Guy. I thought it was cool that Sinestro finally just said, screw it, kill Guy. Like, that should have been the play from the jump. But, yeah.
You just want to kill Guy, though.
Space pajamas plus one, bad quips minus 10. So I give this a borrow.
That space pajamas, it should be at least plus 100. Those
space pajamas were great.
Those were amazing. Hey, Colton, you were saying.
Colton has decided to depart.
Oh, Colton has left. Sorry.
Colton was feeling ill.
And yeah, I apologize. For every listener out there, Colton could and had a headache. He had to go. Hopefully he's better off now.
He was feeling ill. He's got to go.
Like, well.
Too much negative energy on this podcast.
Yeah, we're such assholes. He had to be like, I can't deal with this anymore. These guys.
The headache was all because of the negative.
It's all our fault.
Anyway, yeah. Eric.
I fucking tried. I thought this issue was great. I think this is exactly what I've been saying I liked about the series in the beginning. I think it's kind of – the problem is I want to stay by because I loved it, but I kind of want to like penalize it because it's a little bit more of the same. I think it's characters making really stupid decisions. I think in the beginning, John is like, we're outnumbered 1,000,001. Let's attack them because they might have Guy. It's like, why don't you just consolidate your forces now that you found friendly territory and allies? Why don't you guys get together, like re-energize, get it to find the Justice League? Like, there is no reason for you to attack right now. And if they have Guy, like, yes, Sinestro has kept him alive this long, but it's stupid that he did. So, like, ignore that. Like, oh, it's sad, but why wouldn't that? It might have been more dramatic. It's like, yeah, I told that dude not to start anything, so it's his own fault. And so it's like, I was surprised Brandon didn't jump on this because this is like the series of the increasingly poor decisions of John Stewart, like issue six, you know, like, it's a terrible idea to, like, we're numbered 1,000,001 and we're going to kill all these civilians. Let's do it for Guy. It's like, that's not actually, you're like, you just talked me out of it, like, right now. Like, I know that weird beach thing turned into cake face very quickly as you were describing it. I assume it was a euphemism for something on Earth, but I'm not into this right now. Like, you know, and so it makes John seem stupid and it ruins the suspense. And talking about ruining suspense, storytelling wise, there's that weird reveal where they turn, like, he's like, go kill Guy. And then the next page, Lissa goes down to kill Guy. And they turn that into a huge splash page of Guy all beat up, you know, and you're like, oh man, Guy, wait, why is this a splash page? Like, we know he's alive. It's not a huge surprise that he's like, he's a little beat up. Like, oh man, they fucked up his eyeball. Like, fuck, I don't care. Like, you don't. It's like a weird wasted splash page, you know? I mean, some of the art is cool. Maybe a little bit more choreography and stuff, and the space pants are hilarious because, like, it is literally the same space, like, he's looking at. So I don't think they're space pants, they're mirror pants. They're just reflecting what he's seeing. Like, if you saw the back of it, you would just see, like, the front of Lissa. But anyway, I think the whole Hal doing the quips thing, this is the characterization of Hal that I would have always loved to have had, because they always were like, oh, Hal's the hotshot, he's the rogue. But it's like, what does that equate to? Because everybody's like, we love Han Solo because he's the rogue. But if you watch Star Wars, Han Solo just pisses and moans the whole time, doesn't contribute too much, and makes a couple of jokes. But people assume, like, Mal Reynolds from Firefly is Han Solo. It's like, no, Mal Reynolds is what Han Solo, everybody thinks Han Solo is. He's like Han Solo times like 10 times more entertainment, you know, with no nostalgia. You know, so that's basically what they're like, yeah, fuck it, we should make Hal like that. He's so gung-ho, he talks a lot of shit. Like, you know, he's trying to make as many jokes as possible. And some of this stuff is hilarious. Like, he actually reads to me more like a Frank Miller Batman. You know, like every single, or Frank Miller Sin City character, every time there's a fight, the guy's like, I'm having a ball. Like, and the guy's like, you're crushing my baby. He's like, shut up, cry baby. Like, it's the whole fight team plays out like that. It's super exciting. It's see how I'll do this stuff. It seems weird because John's decision to fight was so stupid in the beginning. You're like, oh, that makes me think Hal's decision is stupid too. But no, Hal thinks he's the only person in the galaxy who can do anything. This is literally what he has to do. So it makes Hal seem cooler. I think they kind of wishy-wash whether Hal's just more powerful or just better at being a Green Lantern than the rest of these guys. But I like, kind of like the idea that he's just, you know, like shooting jets at them and stuff like that, and then he kicks everybody's ass and he just like lets Sinestro lose his fight. I think it's a little confusing for me at the end where Sinestro taps into the Parallax power and like shows up as the Parallax form. It's like, but you already took that form. Are we to believe that you're not always at that level? Like, I'm really confused about what the power sets are and stuff at this point. But I mean, it's so exciting. It's so interesting. Hal's characterization is finally like, this is the kind of characterization you want. Not just like the asshole, you know, who like is basically like, you know, a Boy Scout, but once in a while he sleeps around like that. No, this is what's funny. This is what he should have always been. Like, he's not, I don't see it as Spider-Man. I see it as like, you know, it's not like necessarily even Ryan Reynolds, you know, but it's like it's Malcolm Reynolds, you know. So that's the kind of characterization I think you should have, you know.
I'm Malcolm Reynolds because he's in a plane.
No, because Malcolm Reynolds is the characterization. Malcolm Reynolds was the Han Solo archetype. He's the stoic. Well, he's not stoic. He's the lead who's not stoic. He's sarcastic. He talks a lot of shit. He's not always the best, but he's like the bravest, and he pulls it off. Like, you know, the idea of
Han Solo. But every comic book guy wants
the concept of Han Solo is supposed to be everything in Star Wars is portentous and ominous and kiddie friendly, and Han Solo is the only character that's like, no, that's stupid. Like, everything's like, that's dumb, and it makes the audience laugh because you're like, haha, he's like me, he's cynical like me, so it's okay for me to buy into this child's universe and stuff. And that's the kind of thing they wanted Hal Jordan to be. But Han Solo doesn't really make that many jokes. He's not really that useful. If Han Solo was the main character, he wouldn't be a very good main character, you know, like kind of dreading those movies, you know, unless it's like a gangster kind of heist movie and stuff. But actual space operas don't really work with that kind of character. Malcolm Reynolds was an attempt to take that Han Solo character, that contrarian, a cynical guy who's like a hotshot, and kind of and make him actually funny and palatable, like make him more, as you guys said, more Spider-Man-like. Because I don't think Hal's really being Spider-Man-like. He's not making clever puns. He's not saying cute shit. He's just figuring out different ways.
Which is the worst part, is that it's not funny.
I don't think it's not funny. I think it's some of that he's just talking shit. That's all he's doing. So basically, this is Xbox. Like, Hal is like a really, really great Call of Duty player, and he's in a room with a bunch of noobs, and he's taking total advantage and stuff like that. You know, like, he would be saying, like, you know, horrific epithets, and he would be all up about grabbing pussy, you know, like right now, to use the common.
Yeah, I knew I had to stop him at some point. I knew it was going to go to the point.
No, the point is like exactly what it is. I'm not saying that's, obviously I'm not promoting that, but I mean like, because I'm not a monster, but I mean like, you know, that's the premise of the character at this point. He's like a spammer. Like, he's, you know, it's great. I think it's great. I don't necessarily, like I said, he kind of did this the first two or three issues of the series, and that was like what was so vastly entertaining. So as like a climactic battle, this is cool, except that it's surrounded by so much stupid shit. Like, what's going on with Guy is stupid. What's going on with John is stupid. Like, as Brandon suggested, we know that he's going to show up any minute. So it's just, especially like the second page of the issue is number 8, the Sinestro Corps Green Lantern team up, and you see everybody's fine. Like, I hate that kind of promo shit. Yeah,
What's going on with Guy, I don't find it as stupid as it should be. I mean, it's a good look into, like, you know, the whole Fear Engine thing, and it's a good, you know, it's an interesting, like, you know, choice. The whole thing with Jon Stewart, you know, sending Guy out there was a ridiculous move, but Guy being there is a cool choice. I like him in that role right now. It is a good part for me. It's a good part of the story. But yeah, that's it. What were you were gonna say something else, Eric?
No, I think I talked for a while. Like I said, I think it was just the entertainment factor is high, you know, like, and I think there are a few things that maybe Hal should be in his mid-30s at this point that he shouldn't be saying, you know, like, it's about to get real around here and stuff like that. But I mean, overall, it's kind of funny. I think the story might have worked better if Hal had attacked earlier, and that would have been a nice twist. And then he could have been captured and seen the Fear Engine, et cetera, et cetera. Like, the whole detour with Sornik seems really pointless. Like, I think seen in bite-sized bi-weekly issues, if you're reading 10 other comics a week, this is a super entertaining title. But, like, read and organized and talked to about, like, three goofballs, like, you know, for an hour, it loses a lot of the kind of momentum that it could really have, especially because the story is, like, stop starting so often. But so I really want to buy it because this is exactly what I want from this title. But considering it's the third or fourth issue, they've done it in six issues so far, and John is continuing to be a moron, then I got to do a borrow.
All right. Well, those are our thoughts.
Nope, you didn't go to me yet.
Didn't I?
Nope.
I swore I thought I started with
absolutely
you.
Absolutely no. You started with me on the last one.
You used up your time with that Audible thing, man. That's your fault. You fucking money grubber.
You should have gone to audibletrial.com/lanterns.
And that was Dime's entire...
Yeah. Dude, I was going to say that exact thing, yeah.
Hey, what were you saying? What were you saying for this issue?
So, I thought this was a fantastic issue number four. It's a really good like middle issue, right? It ends on like, all right, the fight's about to happen. Then the fight happens next issue, and then issue six, which should be two issues away, is where they finally like, all right, resolve some of this plotline stuff and move on. But no, this is issue six where we finally see, like, all right, now Sinestro and Hal finally faced off. And I think I said the same thing last time we reviewed this book, was, like, they should have faced off an issue ago. So I'm pretty sure I've been consistent here on that. Art's great, as always. Sandoval's art is great. Yeah, definitely there's a level of not having necessarily, like, enough to draw. I really liked how he did, like, sort of the flashbacks, which is not just Sandoval and the... colorist Tomio Mori, like together make those flashbacks look really like really different, but still within the style. So I think that's really cool that you can tell that this is a flashback just by looking at it. You know, aside from just the story, you can tell it's a flashback just by looking at it. And I think that's like sort of an important thing to do for an artist, and a lot of artists and colorists together don't do. As far as the story, I think the story is mostly good. Yeah, that sort of splash page of Guy Gardner beat up was weird, but maybe Rafa Sandoval just really hates Guy Gardner. I wouldn't blame him. I don't hate Guy Gardner. I just wouldn't blame Rafa Sandoval for hating Guy Gardner. Other than that, yeah, I mean, like, you know, the fights, like Hal Jordan fighting the Sinestro Corps, like we've seen this like four times already in this six issues so far, and so it's kind of meaningless. Like I said, if they'd cut out one or two of them from a previous issue, then it probably would have been stronger here. But, you know, I do sort of like the Hal powering up, Sinestro powering up, Dragon Ball Z thing, as Brandon said. And then the final, like, oh, Hal in the background and Sinestro like, yo, nope, I'm gonna do this because I'm Parallax and he apparently is willpower. Was pretty cool as well, I think. So all in all, I think the writing was average to above average, and the art was, as always, fantastic. I wish it was two issues ago, but I still give it a buy because it still looks great.
Yeah, let's talk about the length. Just to put this out there.
Okay, go ahead.
Green Lanterns. The first trade of Green Lanterns will collect the Rebirth issue and the first five issues. We're on part six, yeah. And the next issue is Sinestro versus Hal.
Yeah. This is going to go at least eight issues of just this story.
What kind of conclusion are we getting? Like
the promo for the, not to like whatever, the promo for issue eight implies Starro is going to show up and they need to team up against him. So not only is this issue six, and as we said, it feels like it's a truncated story. It's actually going to have some level of resolution in the next issue that's going to, like, you know, lead into the next issue, you know? So, yeah, very strange.
It better. But what kind of story arc ends on issue seven? Or, like, what is it? What kind of trade is he writing for? What does he have in his contract that allows him to write for a seven-issue trade?
It's technically eight, because you have to include...
Yeah, that's true.
Rebirth
issue. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah.
I don't know if he forgot about the trade and he's just like, hey, I'm just going to make the most of this bi-weekly schedule, because if rumors have it, they all end the bi-weekly schedule at issue 24. Dude, that's a long time from now. I don't know if we can handle that.
Oh, well, I know I'll be reading it, but yeah, that's a long ways away.
Yeah, I mean, I think it doesn't make sense for
the story.
I think it's worthwhile to have a segment of a cast about. I guess it's kind of like, because I guess the Rage storyline ended, so like they did have an ending for a storyline in the Green Lanterns. Like, and I know this is the second part of Family Affair. Like, is there, if there, how many parts are going to be Family Affair? It seems kind of superfluous to make these again. I mean, it actually would probably be useful for us to look at them as completed storylines and what exactly we got out of the biweekly thing. Because I think in terms of like Green Lanterns, maybe there's a bit more, as you said, like he is actually creating a more concise story in the Green Lanterns issue. But like that last part of the Atrocitus storyline was like a huge, just a shit show in terms of like how it paced itself out, you know? And then to go into this, it's almost like, okay, yeah, maybe you shouldn't be doing the biweekly book. Whereas this series, like, a bunch of nonsense happens to keep the story going, and it should have been ending sooner. But like, it does have a lot of momentum. It is super exciting. It is kind of fun. So in terms of like, you know, you're reading a comic that comes out every 2 weeks, you're not really reading every comic that comes out every 2 weeks. It's kind of like, are you really expecting to get like, you know, something really worthwhile every 2 weeks? And it's not to say you can't, but to say it's like, what do you want out of a 2 week comic? You know, like, now, by the time this storyline will be over, we'll have had two full storylines for Green Lanterns, but we really have gotten more entertainment out of that versus this. I think it's, I don't know how to judge what Green Lanterns is doing, you know, like versus
it's
what.
It's fluff. That's like, we're dealing with fluff. Sam Humphries, right, of course, yeah, has, yeah, a lot more than Robert Venditti. It's just that we notice it more in Hal because the issue number is lower.
If anything, yeah, because Hal has more fluff and Venditti, Humphries has more depth to his story. I just happen to think it's really super shallow depth. That is very like, I'd rather have issues like seven issues of Simon Bass telling me about how he can live his life a quarter ring at a time, and like just barreling through water towers and like catching what's her name, Lizzie, off the side of a freeway. I don't
know. Who's Lizzie? Who is? Yeah, wait, what?
Again,
this is all Fast and Furious reference.
Right, but I don't know who Lizzie is. Who is Lizzie?
Like, I've never seen a single one, and I assume there is someone named Lizzie who's falling off a bridge, and there's a lot of like wheelies and stuff. What do you call it when a car jumps off a bridge? It's not a wheelie. I guess it's just a car jump off a bridge. That kind of thing. I'd rather see that for seven issues than like them bullshitting me around. Like, it really matters. Like, what the casserole is making for his mom. It wouldn't matter if you, the writer, were super invested in these characters, but you're kind of just putting there to make yourself kind of stand out. Ah. So I'd rather have 10 issues of Hal just going like, I'm going to break your dicks off, like, you know, and flying through 10 guys versus like, you know, like, oh man, my cousin lost his teddy bear again. I better look under the table for 12 pages. Like, you know, so anyway.
Yeah, I sort of agree with Eric. I do. I really wish there was more, Corona drinking and like all about family with Simon Bass. But like,
where's the Rock's cameo? Like, where is the Rock?
Yeah, and where's his Rock? Shouldn't he also be like talking to special agents in the CIA who are trying to put him on charges because he's a terrorist, quote unquote?
I'm saying if we're getting a Planet of the Apes crossover, we should get an Agent Hobbs. Like, that's the name of the Rock's character, right? An Agent Hobbs crossover. Like, he should just drive into town and be like, heard you're a terrorist, but I need your help. Like, you know, like, because like, I think that's also the plot of those movies. He's an FBI agent that somehow needs
together a team. He's like,
he constantly needs criminals' help. Yeah.
Right. So he's like an incredibly humongous FBI agent who's dressed like he's in the middle of a tactical battle at all times, who needs the help of a DVD thief, like, you know, to like fight international terrorists who are going to blow up Brazil or something, right? Like,
this is all entirely accurate to the plot of the film.
He's actually the worst special agent of all time. Fine, great. I'm just making sure I'm following these movies.
Okay. Check out our Fast and Furious podcast.
That's what we should do.
It's called the quarter ring at a time.
Our brightest day, next brightest day should be, you know, we watch the Fast and Furious movies and I try to understand them.
Okay, so that was our rants, our reviews, our talks about the Green Lantern. Hopefully you enjoyed them. Hopefully, we definitely want to hear your opinion on the issues. Again, you go to the greenlanterncore.com forums, talk to us there. Till then, stay green.
Be sure to check us out at www.thegreenlanterncorps.com. You can email us at contact@thegreenlanterncorps.com, follow us on Twitter @theGLCorps, or reach our voicemail line at 313-GL1-2814. That's 313-451-2814. Check out Kirby Crackle, performers of our opening theme, Ring Capacity, at www.kirbycracklemusic.com, and the Roy Clark Method, performers of our ending theme, Sector 2814, at royclarkmethod.webs.com.
I have this magic ring. It is the color green. It can do anything. Sometimes it speaks to me. It says, how? What?